Hi, I'm Carmen LaBerge. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. It is Wednesday, January the 9th, 2019. Welcome, welcome, welcome. So what we try to do here every day on Connecting Faith is to take the headline news, apply the mind of Christ, and then enter into the conversations of our day as ambassadors of the kingdom of heaven in the midst of the kingdoms of this world. And so there are a myriad of subject or topics that we might address here each and every day on Connecting Faith. And, you know, I've got literally dozens of options in terms of how we go with the opening segment, which headlines I sort of pick and choose from. And some of you have observed in your communications to me that you find some subjects tiresome, and others of you communicate that you don't hear about things often enough or in sufficient detail to fully understand the issue or the concern. So, seeking to return to a subject matter that we have discussed before, or we have discussed some portions of this conversation before, but highlighting it because there are headlines across the country today in relationship to this issue and concern, I will return to the conversation related to whether or not gender is something that's binary, God creating us male and female. I would actually call that biological sex, like, right? That is your biological sex. You are male or you are female. And then we have the introduction of this term gender, which is, if you think long and hard about this, this is a relatively new conversation. It has not been around that long in terms of human history, a conversation about the possibility of a person being neutral or gender non-binary, not identifying as male or female, not accepting the reality of their biology, not accepting the reality of what they see in the mirror, but instead identifying with a reality that is either the opposite of their biology or, and that would be males identifying as females, biological males identifying as females, or biological females identifying as males. And those people, we would use the term transgender. That is the word they use. But then there are also a number of people who now describe themselves as gender non-conforming or non-binary and consider themselves neutral in terms of their gender. So why am I talking about this today? Well, because the headlines today out of Cambridge, Massachusetts, say, I got headlines today from Cambridge, Massachusetts, and from New Jersey, New York, and California, all related to this subject. So I will hit upon a few of them. This from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Cambridge moves to add gender X option on birth certificates. Here is the lead from CBS News in Cambridge. The city of Cambridge took a step forward Monday toward offering a gender neutral option on birth certificates. The city council voted to create a law that would add category X to accommodate transgender and non-binary people. And then it says Maine, Oregon, California, New Jersey, Washington, and New York City have adopted similar policies. The list is actually slightly longer than that. My list includes non-binary gender options in Arkansas, California, Colorado, Maine, Minnesota, New York, Oregon, Washington State, Washington, D.C., as of the 1st of February, New Jersey, which is the next story, and now the city of Cambridge, Massachusetts. My guess is that there are many cities across the country that have taken this step or this action that we don't hear about because city council actions don't often rise to the level of national news coverage. But once these decisions are made by state legislatures, then they get the kind of news coverage that the USA Today, Josh Hafner is the reporter on this, give us here, this is a January 3rd USA Today article entitled Gender X, New York City Adds Gender Neutral Option to Birth Certificates. Here's the lead of that article. New York City now offers a gender neutral option on birth certificates for residents who don't identify as male or female. It's called X. As of this week, and again, he's talking there about the beginning of January 2019, so this calendar year, adults over 18, and again, here we're talking about New York City, can alter their birth certificates to X so long as they attest via a form that the change, quote, is to reflect my true gender identity. Now, if you're confused about what kind of confusion that will lead to, you're not alone. There are lots of folks. I mean, I was standing in line waiting to amend an access card. And so I'm like in the public safety office of a particular institution where I have an access card. And on the wall, it's public safety. So, you know, it's like the cops, but not really, because you're at an institution. And on the wall, there's this list. And, you know, so like while you're standing there, they want you to read some stuff, right, that's going to promote public safety, you know, on this campus and in this institution. And at the very top of the list, so what they're trying to do here is, okay, if you see something, say something category of how it is that as the public we're supposed to report on things that we find suspicious or think are suspicious, right at the top of the list, it's, you know, make a visual assessment and be sure that you can describe the person about whom you're suspicious in these ways. And right at the top of the list is, you know, are you looking at a male or a female? This is going to be a challenge for anybody just reporting general things. I mean, even if the person who you are seeking to report on, if the suspicion that you have is not of them, but of something happening to them, you know, I see a woman attacking a man. I see a man attacking a woman. What am I looking at? Okay, so we have entered a very challenging time because law enforcement is now required to respect the gender identity, the gender expression of individuals. And I understand that. And it's important. We want to respect people. But this breeds real confusion in terms of the application of law. And I think we have to know that. I think we have to recognize that. I think we have to talk about it. And I think that if you have gender nonconforming friends, this is like a God honest conversation you have to have with them. Like they're going to have to help the rest of us understand how it is that this subject matter is actually going to be approached in community. It's one thing for an individual to have a particular expression, especially when that is fluid. It's really challenging for the rest of us to keep track and keep up. So we're going to need some help. So enter New Jersey into the conversation. So here is the headline. Taryn Pryor is the journalist here. NewJerseyFamily.com is the news reporting website. Gender neutral birth certificates are coming to New Jersey. Starting in February, parents will be able to choose a non-binary identity for their newborn. That's the headline. It's the headline and then the subhead. And here's the lead. Starting February 1, New Jersey birth certificates will have a third gender option for parents to select for their babies. Non-binary. Okay, I would like to unpack that sentence. New Jersey birth certificates are an indication of what? Well, first of all, that the state is recognized that a human being has been born in their state. And I don't know how many times and occasions you have been asked to present your legal birth certificate. Mine comes from the state of Indiana. I was born in Muncie. And so that's what my birth certificate says. It indicates my parentage. It indicates that my dad was, you know, Larry Morton Fowler, and my mom, Ruth Ann Benefiel Fowler, and, you know, and me, my name slapped on there by my parents, right? They picked a name, Carmen Suzette, and, you know, and there wasn't an option, right? It's a girl. That's what the doctor said to my mom when I was born. since I'm old, prior to the days of knowing in advance, you know, who was coming, what variety of creature was emerging, other than it was going to be a human baby, didn't know whether or not it was going to be a boy or a girl. So it's a girl is a declaration, proclamation that was shared with my mom and my dad upon my birth. It's also what is indicated on my birth certificate. It aligns with reality. It aligns with my biological reality. I'm a girl. I'm a female. I'm a woman. Had my parents had the option of selecting binary or non-binary, and binary, the binary options being male or female, what does that say about their position? This is where I want to pause and have us consider reality for just a moment. New Jersey birth certificates will have a third gender option for parents to select for their babies. Again, the subhead, parents will be able to choose a non-binary identity for their newborn. This has nothing to do with that human baby. This has everything to do with adults who are projecting a completely imaginary reality onto new human beings, onto these infant children. The idea that any adult would be able to say to a newborn child, you are non-binary. Your identity is not the way God created you and knit you together in your mother's womb. You are a non-binary person. That is, I hope you recognize just how disintegrated, just how completely unhinged from reality this is. And so how are we going to talk about this? I think we're going to talk about it in the ways that we need to. We need to be people who recognize that to be biologically male or biologically female is God's design for a human being. People who misunderstand that or have some sort of flawed relationship with their biological reality are people who have a break with reality. That may sound strong, but it's true. And you and I are going to be people of the truth, and we are not going to compromise the truth in order to accommodate a now culture-wide delusion. Again, I recognize that strong language, and you know, those folks who are non-binary and gender non-conforming who know me will in no way be surprised to hear me say that. And so conversations with gender nonconforming and non-binary individuals is important for us to have. I'm not suggesting we have this conversation in a vacuum or in a silo, but I am saying we are going to stand where the Bible stands on this issue without compromise and without giving in to the collective delusion of our day. All right, friends, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to be talking about a religious test and whether or not if you were presented with a religious test, whether or not you'd pass. All right, I'm Carmen LaBerge. You're listening to Connecting Faith. We'll be right back. Hey, friends, you are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. I hope you're having a blessed Wednesday. Looking forward to having a conversation now about a particular headline related to, I don't even know how to quite frame this. I'm going to call it religious prejudice. I'm going to call it prejudice against those who are identified with and identifiable as Christians in the public sphere today. And I'm talking about this for a particular reason. If you roll back the clock, I feel like it was 6, 7, 8 months ago, we were kind of astonished. I was kind of astonished to see religious tests applied by senators when nominees were coming before them for the Senate's ratification of, you know, senators have to approve of different folks who are nominated for positions. And so particularly when we're talking about those who are going to serve at any level on the federal bench, the Senate Judiciary Committee has the opportunity to sort of examine those individuals and decide whether or not those individuals are going to be sort of allowed to proceed to actually serving as justices or judges. Judges is probably the right language here. Judges on the bench. So we saw this happen in a couple of cases last year. And at the end of the year, it happened again. And because we were so close to the close of the year, I think most people simply did not know that this was going on, that this was still happening, and that it was actually intensifying, I think is the word I'll choose to use here. So if you thought that prejudice against Catholic politicians ended, back in the days of the election of John F. Kennedy, you'd be wrong. Anti-Catholic bigotry is still with us, and it was on full display in December when U.S. senators sent written questions to a Nebraska lawyer who was recently nominated by President Trump to sit on the U.S. District Court in Nebraska. So his name is Brian Boucher. He is an attorney in Omaha, Nebraska. And some of those questions were legitimate. What's your judicial philosophy? You know, tell us sort of how you go about making the decisions that you make as a jurist. And yet two Democratic senators demanded answers about Mr. Boucher's membership in a particular Catholic service organization. And that Catholic service organization is called the Knights of Columbus. It's been around for 140 years. Let me tell you a little bit about the Knights of Columbus before we get to who it is on the Senate that thinks that anybody who's a member of the Knights of Columbus is unfit to serve in any way in public service. So the Knights of Columbus, for more than a century, has defended minorities and minority causes, not here only here in the United States, but around the world, which makes the fact that it's minority senators senators from minority backgrounds, black and brown people, It makes it stunning to me that they are the ones who are suggesting that because someone is a member of the Knights of Columbus, they are unfit to serve as a judge. The Knights of Columbus ran integrated hospitality and recreation centers for troops in World War I. That's a long time ago in America for anybody to do anything that was integrated. It was the only charitable organization in the country to do that. They were seeking to confront prejudice in how history was taught. And so in the 1920s, they commissioned books on black and Jewish history in America. They stood against the Ku Klux Klan as far back as the 1920s at the height of its power. They helped fund the Supreme Court case that defeated the Klan. And the Knights, they spoke against the persecution of Jews in Nazi Germany as early as the 1930s, when other people were silent and hoping that the whole situation would go away. Today, the Knights of Columbus assist victims of the Islamic State. They're seeking to rebuild towns in what you and I would call the cradle of Christianity in the Nineveh Plain, in order that people can return there and rebuild their homes and rebuild their lives. This is the organization. This is the organization that is apparently so awful and so bad that membership in it is believed to be, by at least two members of the U.S. Senate, cause to keep a person off the federal bench. Hawaii's Mazi Hirono and California's Kamala Harris did not ask anything about the Knights of Columbus charitable work, which includes more than $1 billion in assistance and hundreds of millions of hours of service just in the last decade. Rather, they wanted answers about what they call extremist positions. You want to know what those extremist positions are? The Knights of Columbus, being a Catholic organization, they uphold the sanctity of marriage between one man and one woman. And so they were supportive of the 2008 California Proposition 8, which would have banned same-sex marriage in that state. And these female senators who happen to be minority backgrounds, apparently not understanding what the Knights of Columbus have done for minorities in this country over decades, actually over more than a century. They also took issue with the group's opposition to abortion. So if you don't support abortion and you don't support same-sex marriage and you actually hold membership in some organization that upholds those pro-life and pro-marriage positions, at least these two senators argue that you're not fit. You're not fit to serve this country. Think about that for a moment. In 2017, Senator Dianne Feinstein, another California Democrat, questioned judicial nominee Amy Coney Barrett. You might remember this. And she said to her, I'm trying to remember the exact quote. It was like, dogma lives loudly in you. Okay, I got to tell you, if you put me on the stand for anything and you press upon me a religious test, I hope your judgment is that dogma or doctrine or the truth or what God has said in his word lives loudly in me. And I know you're saying, well, yeah, Carmen, it lives loudly in you. What I'm saying to each of us right now is if this kind of religious test, if you were put on the hot seat, would there be enough evidence? Would there be enough evidence to convict you in the eyes of other people that you're actually a Christian? That your views, that your worldview, and that your activism, that your the alignment of where you put your time and talent and energy and maybe money actually aligns with what God has said in his word? Would there be enough evidence to convict you if this kind of religious test were pressed against you? Now, obviously, nobody is supposed to be using a religious test in terms of anything related to public service. We've talked at length in the last few days about the religious diversity of the U.S. Congress, and that's been celebrated. Okay, religious diversity means people can hold their convictions, whatever those convictions are, and they're not going to be tested. We're not going to say, if you are such and such, you cannot serve, or if you're not such and such, you cannot serve. We don't have a religious test in America for service. And yet, these senators continue to get away with this time and time again, applying these religious tests to nominees for the judicial bench here in the United States. So I want to lift that story up to you. It's going to be one of those stories that has legs. We are going to see it again, and we will return to it. But my question for each one of us today is this. If you were on the hot seat of some kind and this religious test question came up, would you pass or fail? Would there be enough evidence to convict you? Would there be enough evidence to say, you know what, this person is actually a pro-life Christian. They are pro-life from conception to natural death or whatever your definition is, right? Or they are pro-family or they are pro-marriage. Whatever the language is, whatever the test is, does your worldview and therefore the way you walk your faith out in the world actually align with what God has said in his word, who you know God to be, his character and his will? All right, friends, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, I am going to be talking with Tracy Miles. Tracy is well-known, a speaker with Proverbs 31 Ministries. She has written a new book, Love Life Again, Finding Joy When Life is Hard, and she will be here with me on Connecting Faith when we return. I'm Carmen LaBurge, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. I am thrilled to be joined by Tracy Miles. She is a popular speaker with Proverbs 31 Ministries. She's also the author of several wildly famous books, Unsinkable Faith, Your Life Still Counts, and Stressed Less Living. She's a contributing writer for Proverbs 31 Ministries' daily devotionals, which are called Encouragement for Today. She's got three kids, and she lives outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. You can find her online TracyMiles.com, and Tracy is with an IE. Tracy, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
So it's fun. It's fun to have you on. You have so many rich life experiences, and many of those you you share in this book and you address. And so I think that, you know, I want to just start out by saying this is a book for single women. This is a book for women who are married. This is a book for women who are moms. This is a book for women who are divorced. This is a book for women who are in redeemed marriages. I mean, on and on and on. So talk with me, share with us, when you sat down to write Love Life Again, who do you have in mind?
Basically, any woman that is struggling with something in their life, which is everyone. None of us are immune to going through really difficult circumstances. And one thing that makes this book especially special to me, and is one of the reasons why I think it speaks to a lot of women, is because I wrote it in the midst of my suffering and my challenges rather than being on the other side. And, you know, I just really had to walk through these steps that I talk about in the book in my own life. And as I was doing that, I was writing the book and God was showing me new and new things.
I love that. Maybe at the beginning, the outset of a new year, I mean, if other people are like me, we've made a lot of big plans for this year, and this year may or may not go exactly as, in fact, it very likely will not go exactly as any of us have planned. Things are likely to happen that are not according to our plan. That doesn't mean they're not according to God's plan, and that doesn't mean God can't redeem them. Right. But my plans are likely in some way, shape, or form to get derailed. Why do you think it's so hard for us to accept sort of life as it is, or life as it might be, versus like life as we expected it?
Well, we all have our different plans from childhood to the beginning, not even just for the new year, but just how our life should look. So when plans do get derailed and life changes drastically, especially from what you think it should be or that it would have been, it's really hard to settle into a place of contentment and trusting God and believing that, okay, maybe this was God's plan, even though my plan was different. And the beginning story that I talk about in the book is when my marriage just ended abruptly one day because of some things that came to light that my husband had been involved with. And life ended that day as I knew it. And unfortunately, restoration was not in the plan for us for a variety of reasons, which there are many marriages that, you know, do experience that. But even if you are on the path to restoration or you're on the path to rebuilding your life that you didn't expect, it's really hard. And, you know, we just have to come to this place of trusting God and letting go of our plans and just believing that whatever we're going through, whatever's happened, that we can still be happy, we can still have joy, we can still experience God's peace, and that He still has an amazing plan for us, even if it's different than, you know, what we wanted or dreamed of or thought it should be.
So folks who are listening right now are now, their hearts are going out to you. That's what happened, you know, when I read that portion of the book as well. And I think that when you talk about the choice, that choosing joy over despair is an important step for folks to take. Can you just talk with folks who are in a situation right now where they literally feel like their life is totally derailed and the plans that they had are not the reality they're now living in, and invite them to choose joy over despair?
Right. Well, that's, I think, the biggest thing that God taught me while I've been walking this journey for the last 3 years. I had been married 26 years and had the three children, as you mentioned. So it was a huge life change. But there's so many things that we all go through, whether it's health issues or loss of loved ones or financial or employment, you know, just so many struggles that we have. And we get up in the morning and we just can't feel any sense of happiness or joy. And this is where I found myself for many, many months after my former husband left our home and pretty much left our life completely. And basically, I went through a lot of days where I couldn't get out of bed, where I couldn't stop crying, where just I felt hopeless and, you know, just so many emotions that we deal with when we go through something that difficult. But I did have one experience that I had gone to a social function, and it was just more, I'd kind of avoided those because I just wasn't ready for it. But it was just a little more than my heart could take that day. And I remember going home, I just threw myself on the bed and I cried for 3 straight hours. And this is something that I share in the book in more detail, but I've never ever cried nonstop for that amount of time, you know, until that day. And so after that, I just kind of settled down and I was just physically and emotionally spent in every single way. And it was right then where I started asking myself, you know, how am I going to live my life from this point forward? And I remember my prayers kind of changed. I had been arguing with God and kind of letting him know how I feel and just pouring everything out. And my perspective started switching a little bit after I've just poured all this out at his feet. And I remember him vividly saying to my heart, "But will you still love me?" And my immediate answer was, "I will still love you, Jesus." And so that kind of gave me hope, not only in him, but in myself, that if I can love him, then I can have his joy in my life. And I chose from that day forward, I'm going to get up every morning and choose joy and count my blessings and try to look at where I am and try to be content and accept the things that have happened, but still have hope for the future. And it's a choice I've had to make every single day since then, because there's still a lot of bad days. There's still a lot of consequences and problems and, you know, changes to accept. But joy truly is a choice. And that's what I want everyone that reads the book to really walk away understanding.
Friends, my conversation partner today is Tracy Miles. Her newest book, Love Life Again, Finding Joy When Life is Hard. I do have copies available. If this is a book that you really feel like you need at this stage of the journey, if you are where we are talking about in one of those seasons of life when things are not going according to your plans and you've been derailed, everything has, it is hard to get up in the morning, all of those kinds of negative rhythms. Tracy and I want to invite you to get a copy of the book. And again, it's Love Life Again. I do have some copies available. You can text me at 877-933-2484. You can always email me, Carmen@myfaithradio.com. Tracy, there were portions of your book that I shared with my precious husband, who had a similar experience in reverse to yours. And so I have the privilege of being married to him now, and I have six kids that you know, came with that exciting package now 8 years ago. Talk with us about mothering when you're in pain and they're in pain. And you want to be discipling them, but you don't really feel like you're in a position to be doing that right now. Just talk to moms out there about how what we choose and choosing joy and how our living with contentment with the life that we have as it is really a demonstration and encouragement to our kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was probably one of the hardest things really to do during, you know, when your family kind of falls apart. Your heart just goes out to your children more than anything. And you're more concerned about them than you are even yourself or the physical situations that you're having to deal with. And so fortunately, you know, I have brought my children up in the church, and they're not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but they do have hearts for the Lord. And they were almost as big a support for me as I was for them. And so that certainly warmed my heart every single day. But I did come to a point to where, you know, they were so upset about seeing me so upset every day. And I had to realize that I'm being a role model for them, and they're going to learn how to deal with situations and how to navigate this current situation we're dealing with, but also the ones in their future, really by the way that I'm living my life right now. And so I had to continue to lean on the Lord, continue to express my trust in him, continue to pour into them and their hearts, and just let God lead the way, because I had no control of anything that was going on around me, but I did have control over my own thoughts and my own actions and my own emotions that are based on my thoughts. And that's what I wanted them to learn is, you know, things stink right now. This is not good and not fun. This is not what we wanted for our family, but we can still be happy, we can still be whole, and we can still live with joy if we intentionally choose to do so. And that was the lesson I wanted them to learn more than anything.
Yeah, I love that intentional choice language. And again, friends, my conversation partner is Tracy Miles. We're talking about her new book, Love Life Again, Finding Joy When Life is Hard. I do have copies available. You can text me, 877-933-2484. Little shout out to somebody from the 612 area code who has already texted in for a book. And you can email me at carmen@myfaithradio.com as well. So, Tracy, I almost resist the word happy. So help me embrace the word happy. Because I for whatever reason, maybe I have been trained over the course of my life that, you know, I'm supposed to focus on joy and not happiness. But you talk about happiness. Help me embrace that.
Well, they do have two very different meanings, because there are certain things that make us feel happy, but it might not be something that's going to be a soul-changing type of happy. You know, it might be something we're just enjoying in the moment. So there's definitely a difference between those two words. But I also think the word happy resonates with people, because who doesn't want to be happy? We all want to be happy with our life and with where God has us. But that's going to have to begin with having joy even when we feel sorrowful, and knowing that Christ's joy can be in us, and we can be thankful and content and have gratitude and, you know, love the people and the things in our lives. Even on those days when we're not feeling super happy, we can still have that joy deep inside of us. So I do think they go hand in hand, but I think that we all want to be happy. And so sometimes thinking about it that way makes it seem a little more realistic. You know, we're going to strive for happiness, but we're going to base it on the joy that we have in Christ, even if things aren't going well in our own lives.
And then I would love to conclude with you sharing with folks how it is that Jesus is the antidote to loneliness, because I really felt like that's a profound and profoundly important declaration.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially in any case where someone leaves your home, or a marriage ends, or people move out, or you lose someone in your life, or maybe you just move across country and you left all your family and friends in another part of the country, loneliness is something that we deal with. And it's actually, research has proven, it's an epidemic in our American society. And I do share a story in the book about a lady I met at a speaking event several years ago, just a precious young woman, and her marriage had ended when she was in her 20s. She had a small 2-year-old son, and she didn't have a lot of money, so she didn't have cable and all the things, you know, even internet access that she could pay for every single month. She had no choice but to either read children's books or read her Bible. And it's just such a powerful story, because she realized over a period of months that she looked forward to spending that time with Jesus in the evenings when she got home from her job and put her little boy to bed. And she realized that, you know, he was there. And although she prayed to have additional people in her life and prayed for new relationships, just as I've done, and I'm sure everyone does, and Jesus really became something that she knew she could go home to. He was there for her, and it really became that antidote for loneliness for her. So it was a powerful story for me, as I had to accept the new situations that I went home to every day. And I just really learned to begin praying for friends, praying for the right people to come into my life, but also staying grounded in the fact that Jesus is the one that's always there and ever present, even when no one else is physically.
Hmm. Friends, you can find Tracy online, tracymiles.com. She's also on Facebook, P31 Tracy Miles. That's for Proverbs 31 Ministries, P31 Tracy Miles. She's on Twitter, Tracy W. Miles, and on Instagram, Tracy Miles. And again, Tracy is T-R-A-C-I-E. The book, Love Life Again, Finding Joy When Life is Hard. Tracy, thank you so much for the book, the conversation. And you are a substantial, beautiful, living demonstration of the gospel. And I think most profoundly, I just want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak to your listeners.
Absolutely. You have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks. All right, friends, I got to take one more quick break. When I come back, I'll be making the connecting point. I'm Carmen LaBerge. You're listening to Connecting Faith. You hold my hand. Hey, friends, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Let's just jump right in and make the connecting point. So today's connecting point is actually just an experience that I had, and sort of the conversation that took place in my own heart and mind. So yesterday afternoon, on the way to pick up a kid whose school is like 45 minutes from home, so halfway, at the halfway point, there's this park. It's called Percy Warner. And yesterday was an unusually warm, beautiful day for this part of the year, for this time of year. And so I left a little early, and in order that I could stop and just take a quick walk through the park. It's just, it was just one of those days that deserved a walk in the park. And so I'm strolling along, and there are not a lot of people in the park. It's kind of mid-afternoon. And I came upon, so, you know, the woods this time of year, there's no leaves on the trees. There's these really dark trees against this really bright, bright blue sky yesterday. No clouds and really no people. Like, you can see a really long way through the woods. You can see the other paths and, you know, largely no people. And all of a sudden, I came around a corner, and there's a boy. I'm going to guess he's about 10 years old, and he's rummaging through the weeds, kind of energetically. He's rummaging through the weeds that are right along the path. And so, I didn't want to startle him by, you know, going past him, or, you know. And so I'm still several yards away, and I'm like, "Hey, what are you looking for?" He did not look up. He is so intently focused on the patch of weeds in front of him. And he had this measure of desperation in his voice. And he said, "My compass, I've lost my compass." And he's that's how he said it. I mean, he's just very, these deliberate words. And so I actually happen to be a pretty good finder of lost things. And so I stopped about a yard before where he was, and I sort of moving the weeds aside, and I'm looking a little bit further back, and I'm making my way slowly through the weeds toward him. And lo and behold, we searched for, I don't know, a couple of minutes, and voila, there it was. And so I had pulled back a patch of weeds, and I pointed to it, right? I'm like, I didn't say anything, but he saw me, you know. I was at that point like close enough in proximity that he could see the area that I was working in as well. And he snatched it up, and his smile just beaming from ear to ear. And he thanked me profusely, and he went running down the path, screaming at the top of his lungs, "I found it! I found it!" And I couldn't tell if he was shouting it at anyone, toward someone, just in proclamation of the finding of the thing. But I can tell you this, he was thrilled. His heart was thrilled. And, you know, it's not lost on me that it was a compass. It's also not lost on me that, and at the time, what immediately, you know, came to mind was the joy that Jesus describes in Luke chapter 15 when lost things are found. And so I want to revisit the parables in Luke chapter 15. Jesus says, suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? Now, the answer to that question, very well, if you are a shepherd, maybe no. You don't leave your sheep in the open country to go off and find one that's lost. If you got 99, you need to protect the 99. You're going to leave the 99 at risk to go search for the one. Jesus is like, of course you would do that. Of course you would leave the 99, even if they are in the open country, and you would go and you would search until you found it. And then you would joyfully put it on your shoulders and take it home. Jesus says, then he would call his friends and his neighbors together, and he would say, rejoice with me. I have found my lost sheep. I actually imagined this little kid yesterday being like, rejoice with me. I have found my lost compass. Jesus says, I tell you, in the same way, there'll be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. And then he goes on. Now, suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one of them. Again, we've gone from 1 and 99 to, so, you know, that's 1%, to 1 out of 10. So now we got 10%. You got a 10% risk of loss here. Suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Does she not light a lamp and sweep the house and search carefully until she finds it? I'm thinking here of like your wedding ring. And the answer is yes. You turn your house upside down and inside out until you find it. And when she finds it, Jesus says, she calls her friends and her neighbors together. Now we just posted on social media. But she calls her friends and her neighbors together. She says, rejoice with me. I have found my lost coin. Jesus then repeats himself. In the same way, I tell you, there's rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. And just in case they have not quite yet gotten the point, Jesus brings it literally home, because we've gone from, you know, the risk of a 1% lost, one sheep out of 100, to a 10% lost, one coin out of 10, to, the loss of a child. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons." You know this story. The one says to the father, "Father, give me my share of the inheritance," which is basically saying to your dad, you know, "I'm just going to go ahead and act like you're dead, so I wish you dead. Give me my inheritance now." And the father graciously divided his property and gave this child his inheritance. He went off into what Jesus describes as a distant country and squandered his wealth in wild living, spending everything that there was. He ends up actually starving. He's starving. He is working in a job that is quite undignified. And he literally, scripture says, comes to himself. That's Jesus describing how he came to himself, came to his senses, came to his right mind, and returned home. And the father rejoices and receives him in. And we know this story as the prodigal son, or the gracious dad, or the elder brother, depending on which perspective you take on it. Jesus is clearly telling it as a story of that which was lost being found. And he's telling it to emphasize the point of the value of that which is found. And he wants us to know that there's great rejoicing in the kingdom of heaven when one sinner comes home, when one sinner lost is found. So as I walked on in great joy, I got to thinking how many people have lost their moral compass, and yet they have no sense of desperation about finding it. They are not searching about intently looking for it. And so it made me wonder, like, how do people plan to make progress toward the, you know, toward home, toward the Father's house, if they've completely lost their moral compass? They don't even know how to turn to home anymore. That repentance of the younger brother, of the son in the story. And that got me thinking about Pilgrim's Progress, which got me thinking about Little Pilgrim's Progress, because Little Pilgrim's Progress is a little easier for me to understand than the Big Pilgrim's Progress. So you can grab a copy of Little Pilgrim's Progress if you haven't read it recently, because I really do think that it's important for us to recognize and understand sort of the pilgrim reality of this journey toward home, this journey toward the celestial city, as Bunyan calls it, and as it's called in Little Pilgrim's Progress as well. I want to make consistent, observable progress toward home. And I want to be walking the way that is narrow and straight. I want to stay on the king's way. And I'm grateful, ever grateful, for the signs and the signposts and the companions and the maps and the guides that God gives. And so I want to encourage us to make use of them. Of course, I'm talking about the Holy Spirit, the Bible, prayer, the fellowship of other believers. And so if you are, if you sort of recognize that you've lost your compass and you're looking to find one, God has given us a compass by which to walk by faith in the world. God has given us the Holy Spirit, the Bible, prayer, and the fellowship and the accountability of other believers. And we need to make use of them. We need to be using the compasses that God has provided in order that we might calibrate our lives to Him, in order that we might be aligned with Him, in order that we might be moving purposefully every single day toward home, toward the celestial city. So I want to encourage us, in a culture where we often see signs that folks have completely lost their moral compass, I want to encourage us to, you know, start with ourselves individually, start with our own families, start with our own churches, and acknowledge that we got to recalibrate who we are and where we're headed and how we're getting there in order that others might find us faithful guides to point them in the right way, that we might be human signposts toward the celestial city and home. All right, friends, we are about out of time today here on Connecting Faith. I love being with you. Visit us online at myfaithradio.com, the Connecting Faith page there. And check out what I'm doing at reconnectwithcarmen.com. And have a great day, and God bless. I'll see you right back here tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this conversation from Connecting Faith. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend to grow the impact of Connecting Faith. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a conversation.